Welcome to the Welsh Yogi Podcast.
Hare Krishna, everyone.
Welcome to
a really long-awaited episode of the Welsh Yogi Podcast. This one's a special one. It's a post-Rathiatra special. And we've got a special guest that we've imported from Scotland that you've all heard before, Adoksh Krishna Prabhu.
Okay, the noon, Jimmy.
Yeah. How was your Rathiatra experience yesterday in God's country, in Wales?
It was the best one so far. We've done Edinburgh, Glasgow, Manchester. They were nice, but the Welsh one. Yeah, Welsh was the fourth one. Yeah, that was the best one so far.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was quite crazy. Like the route, the way that the cart kept stopping. Like,
oh yeah.
Like there was one part of the route where the cart started pulling over some bollards, and then the bollards went up, and they just missed the cart, but they locked it in place. So like it was like Jagannath wanted to be locked in that particular spot for a while. I was thinking about that. How like the cart is like put in that position so that certain people will walk past it and get an experience. Maybe they wouldn't have walked past it if it was where it usually stops. Or just thought it was very, very mystical. How.
And also, we just read that morning in the CC that everybody testified who saw Lord Jagannath that they could see him smiling.
Yeah,
and it's an interesting turn of phrase because you know he always has a smile, but we noticed yesterday that he seemed to be smiling more than normal and looking really enlivened, you know.
Yeah, it was. I felt the same thing. Like, because we were in London Rathiatra, and I was trying to look at the deities there, and I couldn't really register. Do you know what I mean? But in Cardiff,
yeah,
it was just something special. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, we thought that we'd do a special episode. This episode, it would be a kind of crossover, so. Some of you may know that Adoksh has done started podcasts, sort of. We've done a pilot episode of, it's called the Bhakti Breakthrough Podcast. So we're going to upload this episode on the Bhakti Breakthroughs, I think.
Okay.
And so we'll give people a little bit of a flavour of what to expect in Bhakti Breakthrough. What's your kind of, what gets you going in terms of what the things you like to speak about on the Bhakti Breakthrough Podcast?
I was Sankirtan and chanting, the holy name, two things I'm trying to get the hang of. And I find the more you can talk about it and examine it and hopefully get some questions and comments back, the more you can deepen your own understanding of these two essential activities that we have in ISKCON.
So I guess some listeners on the Welsh Yogi Podcast don't even know what Sankirtan is, because we do get some sort of complete beginners. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, I'm still trying to understand myself what Sankirtan is, but basically the general way we apply it is going out to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, approaching people who know nothing about Krishna consciousness, speaking a little bit about the book and enthusing the person to purchase. So and integral with their ability is the ability to chant, because otherwise it's just based upon some kind of material karma, charisma. But if we can understand that all our success is ultimately coming from our ability to chant the holy names, then we see the two are actually interdependent.
Yeah, I find it really interesting as well. Like, the more you get into practicing the Krishna, like Krishna consciousness stuff, you've got like the external aspect of these activities. So someone who just looks at us is like, oh, these monks are just going on the street and they're selling books. But there's a whole like internal or under the surface thing happening with the book distribution, and the same thing with the chanting. Like, externally, oh, they're just saying the same words again and again and again,
but well, internally it's a dialogue that's going on. So Krishna's speaking through the persons that you're approaching, and he's telling you you're too proud, or he's telling you you're too lazy, or he's telling you that you're good, that you really, he's really pleased with you. And so through chanting and through book distribution, that dialogue is really brought into focus. If we want to really tune in, that this is the Lord now communicating with me via this process, then we can start to understand the deeper aspect of what's taking place.
Mm. And then what I found when you tune into that deeper level of the process, the surface things which are holding you back become insignificant, and you can do things you never thought you could do, you know?
Or the things that you thought were an obstacle, you start seeing are actually a blessing. Mm. You know, you thought, why do I have to come here and do this in this town? And then you meet somebody, and later on they become a devotee, and you realize you had to go that town to meet them, you know?
Mm.
Or you're chanting, and the chanting is making you feel unworthy, and you're feeling you can't do this, and you're incapable, and it crushes your pride. And then that day, in that humble mood, you're able to really access Krishna's mercy, much more so than the day before when you thought you were Rupa Goswami the second.
Yeah, it's a magical process, really, isn't it? Like, if you get into
it. Or mystical, yeah.
Mystical, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was trying to work out why people were so miserable. And I concluded that because they had given up the belief that magic existed, that's why they were so miserable, because if you believed in magic, why would you be miserable like that?
Mm.
So Krishna consciousness, I think Shyamasundara mentions that quite a lot, the magic of Krishna, that in the early days they just had this complete dependence upon Krishna's mercy, and because of that so many amazing things happened, and now people want to be more comfortable and try and do things in a more kind of sensible way.
Yeah.
And then it's relying more upon our material abilities than upon our dependence upon Krishna.
Yeah, that's my friend Charlie. He used to be into Harry Potter, and he said when he first came Krishna consciousness, it's like, it's like Harry Potter. Like, you wear interesting robes, you have these magic spell books which you read, and it's like got this quality to it that people are looking for. That's why people are attracted to Harry Potter and these types of magical things.
Instead of a wand, we have breadsticks.
Yeah, breadsticks. But that's what one thing as well. I've got friends which they're getting into Krishna consciousness, getting into practicing, and they've heard about this Sankirtan. They might have even tried it by going on a MSF or like a little, like 2 or 3 hours, but they've got this block that makes it really hard for them to, okay, I know I want to do this, but it's just, I can't get through. I can't understand. How do I do it? You know?
Mm.
What would you say to that?
Well, that's like when you're doing the high jump. You don't jump 7 feet straight away. You jump something that you know is easy to do. So you put the bar right down to 3 foot.
Mm.
And you don't even need a pole to get over that, so you can just run up and jump over it. And then every day the bar goes up an inch. So you just find out what you can cope with, you know. Maybe just going on Hari Nam at first. Maybe passing out books that are already sponsored at first. Or maybe just asking people for a small donation and putting it in a can. You start with something that you can do, and the nature of Krishna consciousness is that it develops into greater things. So from a very humble beginning, you can suddenly find yourself doing amazing things. But the trick is not to be impatient, not to try and go beyond what you're capable of doing, otherwise you'll discourage yourself. So just work out what your limits are, work within them, and then in due course, as the saying goes, if you keep doing what you can do, you'll be able to do what you can't do. But if you allow what you can't do to stop you doing what you can do, then you'll never even be able to do what you can do.
Very nice. Yeah, there's also that method with chanting as well, isn't it? You start off chanting. I know Dave Maharaj gives that advice a lot. So you're chanting 4 rounds. Well, next Monday you'll chant 5 rounds.
Mm.
And then the next Monday you chant 6 rounds.
Mm.
And then, you know, within 3 months you're chanting 16 rounds.
Mm.
Whereas if I said, right, start chanting 16 rounds a day, you're never going to chant one round because it's just too much of a...
Yeah, it's interesting. Rupa Goswami is saying we have to be patient. We have to be patient with ourselves. We have to give ourselves a bit of slack sometimes and just appreciate that we are trying and not force ourselves to try and go too fast.
Mm.
Too far too fast. Just be happy that you're trying and slowly build up on that.
Yeah. And then you get into it. it builds momentum.
Well, there's an interesting point in my little list of Sankirtan sutras. How you are on Sankirtan tells the people what the book will do for them. So I know one devotee, he used to give people the book, and whatever it was he was having a problem with, you know, maybe he had a sore toe, and he'd give them the book and say, this book is amazing when you read it. even if you've got a sore toe, your sore toe will start feeling better.
Hmm.
Or these books show you how to overcome being not having much confidence. Or if you're feeling really unhappy, you read this book and it'll make you feel so happy. And you know, and by him speaking like that, he was actually preaching to himself.
Hmm.
And then in due course of time, it would start to enliven him, and then he could rise above. But the book, people see the book in your hand, and they're automatically going to link that how you are with them is a result of how the book has affected you.
Mm.
So if you're looking mental and you're looking like you don't really want to do it, and you're bored, then they're going to think that the book, either it doesn't work or this guy's not read it. But either way, it's not really going to enthuse them to want to take the book.
Mm.
So it forces us to really be the item,
mm.
to be this exuberant, fearless, enigmatic person who's achieved the state of consciousness as a result of assimilating and implementing what the book is saying.
Mm. It's an interesting point, because I know from experience, going on book distribution, when you've been following whatever your mind's telling you, so your mind is just saying, oh, you're useless, you might as well give up, why do you even wake up in the morning? You know, like if you're always telling yourself this type of stuff in your head, then when you hit the street, you can't stop anyone. You're not into it, because you have so much belief about how useless you are.
Yeah.
And I've always, when that happens, I'm like looking for like a pill I can take, or some kind of magic wand I can wave so that I can snap into the right frame of consciousness.
Yeah.
But from my experience, it feels like I have to gradually get into the right frame of consciousness the same way, like one day at a time, try and move myself back on course. I wondered, yeah. Is there a way you can just snap back? Because in the books, they say you can become liberated in an instant, or there's like, maybe there isn't a magic pill. Or
well, you can, but you probably won't.
Mm.
Most of us will take a lifetime to be fully Krishna conscious, although you can be Krishna conscious completely.
Mm.
I mean, Krishna conscious, for those that don't know, is getting a vision of God, really. Getting a full-blown, what's called in Sanskrit, a darshan, which is where God decides he's going to reveal himself to you. It generally takes a lifetime of devotion to achieve that type of a perfection. But it is possible, because God, Krishna, can do anything he wants. If he wants to, he can do it right now. But yeah, generally it's going to be, it's a long haul. It's going to take a lifetime's dedication. And we approach that in a way of becoming more and more consistent in our endeavors. And more and more well-versed with the books, because the books, what the books are putting forward isn't theoretical. It's realized knowledge being handed down for thousands of years. And the challenge is not that can we read the books. It's nice if you do read the books. It's nice also if you pass the books out. These are all really nice. But the challenge is, can you realize? And realize is an interesting word as well, because real, when you realize something, you make what you're reading become real.
Mm.
It's no longer just the theory that Krishna's God and that you're not the body, you're the eternal soul. But that's a reality to you now. How can you make that a reality?
Mm. Because it's like with any kind of endeavor. You just reminded me of, in Shiva Ramaraj's book, Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani, he talks about the process of transcendental knowledge and how it's like an active thing. So you have Sambandhijñāna, which is like the theoretical knowledge.
Mm.
And then you have Abhideya, which is like you act on that knowledge,
mm.
or you do the thing which the knowledge is saying. And then you get Prayojana,
mm.
which is like you get like a little glimpse into what, oh, whoa, there's something to this.
Perfection.
Yeah, and then you can repeat that cycle again.
Yeah.
And it's the same in material things too. It's like, okay,
yeah.
I want to be a better painter. I watch a tutorial on how to do,
yeah.
I don't know, perspective. I practice it, and then the picture looks better because I've practiced it, and then the next picture will have that information in it. So it's just the process of acquiring knowledge.
Yeah.
But with Krishna consciousness, it's like 3D knowledge. Like you have real realization. Oh yeah, I'm starting to think I'm a soul here. Like
interesting. Yeah. At the same time, as you're waking up, you simultaneously become aware that you were in a dream.
Because
when you're in a dream, you don't think you're in a dream. But then you can start to rise up into full consciousness during the course of the dream and start to realize, oh, this is just actually a dream, and you become aware of your real identity which you'd forgotten in the dreaming condition. So material life, we are under the spell of the material energy, and we've forgotten that we have a spiritual nature, a spiritual identity. And these acts of book distribution, devotional services, chanting the holy names, this is reviving our consciousness so that we can start to become aware of where we are, where we belong, where we've come from, and where we want to get back to.
Yeah, it's like this interesting, especially when you start Krishna consciousness, there seems to be this long period where you're starting to wake up, and you have these little like moments of, wow, I'm awake. And then you choose to go back to sleep, and it's like this. It's almost like the same as when you're getting out of bed. Like you could wake up, or you could just keep sleeping.
Yeah, I remember I had a dream, and there was a chocolate cake, and I was trying to grab this chocolate cake, and I was going through brick walls and over mountains and under oceans, and the cake was always just ahead of me, and I finally got my hands on the cake, and the cake started shaking and ringing, and I realized my alarm clock had gone off. So I kept my eyes closed and I kept one hand on the cake and I fumbled around for the alarm clock and I switched it off and I went back to the cake and I started eating the cake in the dream. So it's like that with material life. You've been pursuing material desires and then suddenly you get a wake-up call from Krishna. And then do you want to now wake up? Or because you've spent so much time and energy trying to find this cake, pursue this material desire, do you want to switch everything else off? And continue on pursuing it, you know. It's like the Matrix, isn't it? He says, you can have the blue pill or the red pill. And then there's one guy, he's eating some meat, and he's saying, well, if this is a dream, it feels really good. I just want to stay here.
Yeah.
So although he had the chance of waking up, he prepared to just stay in the illusion.
Mm.
I suppose it's a question of sincerity as well.
Yeah. And it's really, really easy for you to choose to put the alarm clock off and go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Like the opportunity will come up really quickly, really easily for you. And
yeah.
It seems like I catch my mind sometimes, like coming up with this idea and you're like, and then you go, wait a second, that's my mind. That's not me.
Yeah.
And you don't have to listen to it either. Like, you know.
And the mind won't thank you for listening to it as well. If you do decide to relax your endeavors to be Krishna conscious, it's not that the mind will come to you later on and say, oh, that was really good, you slackened off there, I'm really proud of you. The mind will be just the opposite. It will be, why did you do that, you fool?
Yeah.
And you say to the mind, well, I thought you'd be happy with me doing it. And the mind says, you know you're not supposed to listen to me. Are you some kind of idiot? You read the Bhagavad Gita. Why are you listening to me? So don't think that you can make the mind a friend by giving in to it. The only time the mind becomes your friend is when you discipline the mind. Then the mind thanks you. It says, that was really good. I told you not to do it. You did it anyway. I'm really proud of you.
Interesting. So like discipline seems to be one of the key elements to staying on track.
Yeah.
Like especially at first. Like
discipline and disciple are very similar words, you see. So we're all in Krishna consciousness, we become disciples of a guru, and we're only a real disciple if we're disciplined by his instructions.
Yeah. And it's like because you were talking before about habits, and like how many days does it take? 28 days to form a habit. And for me, we have this thing called Mangalati, which is like morning prayers. And for like the past 3 months, I probably went 3 times, you know? And it was really like getting to me, like, this is not a good situation, because I know when I go, I feel sharp. So this month of Purushottama now is just happening. It's like a special month. And I've been just, forget what my mind says, forget what time I went to bed. I'm going to Mangalati every day.
Mm.
And now we're like 24 days in, and it's not very hard at the moment.
Yeah.
Like it's because it's just what I've decided to do.
Yeah.
So the habit's forming, and
yeah.
it's just like if we can find a reason to be determined to practice something, any reason. Good. Okay, it's September next month. For the whole of September, I'm gonna stop eating meat, or I'm gonna wherever you're at. You know, I'm gonna chant every day 4 rounds. Whatever your next step is, if you make that conviction and have that discipline to fulfill it. It's like you make a big step forward, and and then you get the prayojana, you get the realization, you know? Because people tell you, do this, and you get a realization, and you do it, and you get a realization, you're like, oh.
If you make friends with someone that's spiritually strong, and that relationship is intimate, then that person will pull you along, because what we tend to want to do is we want to avoid accountability. And intimate relationship means accountability. Mm. So, and that's why society is very impersonal. Nobody wants to be committed in a relationship or a situation or a job. People want to float around from one situation to the next. So, committing to an intimate relationship with somebody and then remaining accountable, these safeguard us against slackening off and giving in to our lower self.
Mm. Yeah, you become the average of the people that you hang out with, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, like, if you want to slacken off, you find yourself hanging out with people who are slacking off. You know, like, you go down the pub and they're all hanging out with each other and they all feel fine because all the other people are getting drunk, so what's the big deal? But if you're around, like, really seriously practicing spiritual people, it's like, I feel bad. Like, I need to sort myself out, you know? Which is good. Sometimes you need that, you know?
And also it can make you, if you're pursuing something spiritual, you can make people that you would normally associate with feel uncomfortable by your presence.
Mm.
Because you're reminding them all the time that you do believe there's a life after this and there's karma. And they're trying to forget that. They're trying to just have a carefree life where they can enjoy their senses without feeling any guilt or any repercussions in the future, you see. So then if you become strong in your spiritual practices, you will be forced to associate with a different group of people.
Yeah.
Because if everyone's smoking and you don't smoke, it's reminding all of them that they're going to get cancer.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, get rid of this guy. He's a real killjoy, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's really vital, isn't it, that association? And someone who's further along than you, like you said, you're saying this morning about links in a chain, you link yourself up with someone and they pull you, and that's why it's important to have a spiritual teacher.
You start
off with like shiksha gurus, which are like
instructors
who give you instruction, shiksha, on what you should do next, and then that should lead you to having a diksha guru who connects you to the parampara, right?
Yeah, where the Hare Krishna movement, nothing stationary in a movement. So when you link to somebody, that link is moving forward and you're being pulled along. And for you to maintain your connection, you have to move.
Yeah.
You can't drag behind. So that's why the linking process is very necessary.
Yeah. You have this obligation because you've made certain promises or vows. When you get initiated, you have to make vows, and the vows become a weight or a burden.
Mm.
But it's a weight it's a weight of love. It's like an appreciate. It's a weight you will appreciate.
A labor of love.
Labor of love, yeah. Like when you're having tough times, it's like, I've made this vow, so no matter what, I'm doing this minimum.
Yeah, there was one guy who went to a counselor, and he said, "I don't love my wife anymore." And he said, "Well, love her." And he said, "No, you know, I'm paying you for this, by the way, and I've just told you I don't love my wife." And he says, "No, and I'm telling you, you need to love your wife." So we have a tendency to think that love is a feeling, but it's not. It's a doing word.
Mm.
So love your wife means listen to your wife, respect your wife, serve your wife, be considerate to your wife, protect your wife. That's what loving your wife means.
Mm.
It's not a question of whether you feel like it. It goes much deeper than that. So we need to put aside our sentimentalities and we need to act out of duty. And then real living relationships can develop, not just, like there was that song, "Bring back that love and feeling, now it's gone. So people are just completely at the mercy of wherever they're thinking, you know, wherever they're feeling. So one minute they get married and have three kids and they feel great, and then the next day they get up and they don't feel like they love her anymore and they're off.
Yeah.
What about the kids? What about, maybe next week you think you love her again and you come back, you've ruined it. You need to just stay with things and not allow yourself to be so whimsical.
Yeah, and back to what we were talking about, the mind. I believe the Vedic texts talk about how feelings is one of the functions of the mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, so it's thinking,
yeah,
feeling and willing.
Yeah.
So like, if you follow your feelings, you're following your mind. Is that correct? Unless it's...
Well, when you say mind, there's a lot of levels to the mind. There's the intelligence, there's the ego, there's the desire, there's memories, there's past life, experience, trauma, affinity. There's a lot of stuff going on. When we say the mind, it includes a lot of things, actually. So if you break it down, there'll be desire in there. There'll be aversion will be in there as well. You may be really scared of heights or really scared of fast red cars, or something will just trigger off, and you're not quite sure why that is. You're not consciously aware of why that is, but it's there. And the process of self-realization is you start unraveling everything. You start trying to get the bottom of it. You know, well, why am I so afraid? What is really going to happen to me that I need to be so afraid? How can I learn to deal with this? How can I conquer it, overcome it? How can I change? We're trying to change. We don't want to change the world. We want to change ourselves. And because we're part of the world, then automatically the world will change when we change.
Mm. Be the change you want to see in the world. And then linking that back to the book distribution, if you are really embodying that self-change attitude, like I've changed, look, and you can show, you can describe the ways you've changed and connect that to people and show them they can change, they're going to want a book, because everyone knows, everyone wants to change, everyone's feeling out of place.
Like, everybody wants to be fearless. So if you're out there on the street approaching people and thinking, I would never have the courage to do that, I wonder how he's managed to do that. And then he starts telling you, well, I was actually the same as you, but I've been applying this process and I'm overcoming all my fears. And Srila Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement, when they asked him, when you're engaging in meditation, what do you especially experience? He said, I especially experience all freedom, freedom from all fear. That's what he said. So if you can display that to somebody, then it's very, very attractive. That's why people are taking antidepressants and amphetamines and big cars and everything they're doing. They're hoping to try and get over this fear. You know, and the ultimate fear is actually the fear of death. So if you're not afraid of death, there's nothing much else that can make you afraid, because that's the most fearful thing. And if you're okay with that, you know where you're going and you know what it is, then everything after that is just a minor detail.
Masujaha, isn't it? That's if you surrender to Krishna, he will
take the fear.
It takes the fear away.
Yeah. And you can give Krishna your fear and he will take it away for you.
Yeah. Really powerful. Yeah, this is, I like the theme of that. Like, change yourself and just like
Well, fear is an interesting thing, because Krishna says, if you become conscious of me, you'll pass over the obstacles. If you don't, you'll be lost. So there he's saying, you know, be afraid. If you don't do this, the consequences are dire. Mm. And then later on, a few texts on, he says, surrender and abandon everything. I will deliver you from all reactions, because we're afraid of what's going to happen to us. Mm. So if there's no reactions, there's nothing going to happen to us. And then he says, do not fear. So basically, Krishna doesn't want us to be afraid. He wants us to come under his shelter, and he'll be so pleased to remove all our fears. But he's asking us, we have to be to do it. He's saying, if you don't do it, it's going to be a big problem. You should just do it, you know.
And was it you who was saying Prabhupada said that his disciples don't have enough fear of Maya?
Yeah.
So Maya meaning the material pullings, our lower urges. We should be scared of those, because they're going to lead us to a place of fear, you know. Interesting.
Yeah, we retreat back to the lap of Maya. Bhaktivinoda refers to it as the lap. So we're thinking we'll be safe there. And we'll retreat to the lap of Maya, the goddess of illusion, and then we'll be safe. And that's actually when we're our most dangerous, because while we're lying there in the lap thinking we're comfortable, Maya is just getting a big chopper ready to just take our head clean off.
Yeah. On that note, thanks for listening. we put this up on the Welsh Yogi podcast. Next episode, we'll be talking about nectar of instruction. Me and Gopal and maybe someone else will be reading through. And then Bhakti Breakthrough podcast, I want to get into maybe some kind of routine. And I think we're going to put all of the episodes of Bhakti Breakthrough on the Bhakti Breakthrough podcast YouTube channel. And then follow us on Instagram for updates when we're releasing episodes. Just keep it nice and simple.
That's it.
Little conversations about book distribution and going deeper into the chanting. Another place you can find a Doxja is every Thursday he does a Japa Sangha.
So everyone's welcome for that, yeah.
Yeah, reach out and come along. I know a lot of boys, Kieran said he enjoys it. Like, a lot of people get a lot out of it. So, but thanks for listening, everyone. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.